team, welcome to episode 102 of Transition Talk, where we talk about dental transitions and how to navigate the sometimes messy path to practice ownership. Whether you're just coming out of dental school, or you're ready to kick off your career, or you're an associate looking for the perfect fit, the act of finding the right practice opportunity can be a lot to digest and pretty overwhelming. Luckily, there are steps you can take and questions you can ask to feel prepared and confident for the process. If you've already listened to episode 101, and if you haven't, go back and listen to that. You'll know that we're doing a little mini-series with our friends at Arthur Marshall. Arthur Marshall specializes in placements for permanent dental, physician, and advanced practices. They have extensive knowledge of the challenges faced by healthcare organizations when recruiting top-tier talent, as well as the challenges candidates face when searching for new opportunities. So once again, I've got Rich Gerke and Kevin Simpson here from Arthur Marshall. Hello, guys.
Hello. How
are you? Hey.
Rich is the Vice President of Dental Partner Success and has a long history in the healthcare sector and an in-depth understanding of market conditions and customer acquisition strategies. He brings a wealth of knowledge and skills to this table and any table he's at, including relationship building, consulting, staffing, and business development. Kevin has over 300 dental physician and executive placements that he has managed and has a deep-rooted understanding of recruitment and people. His experience involves building, developing, and mentoring teams as they implement strategies in support of company goals and objectives. So nice to have you both here again.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here again.
I love it. Well, I continue to be amazed at the just consistency on how we feel about transitions and how you guys feel about placements. In a way, I feel like whether you're finding an associate to be a partner or just an associate or a long-term employee or a buyer, at the end of the day, it's a transition in your business, right? It's a leap in kind of what your business has been and you're making a change. And so I've just been amazed by that. So again, if you haven't listened to episode 101, please go back and listen. We're focusing more in 102 today about all of this is the same, but from the perspective of a candidate and how the candidate sees the process and how they should prepare. And again, I think this is equally as important for a seller or an owner to listen to as they prepare to bring an associate on board. So I'm going to direct this question to you, Kevin. What are the four most important things, or five or three, you know, you tell me the number, that a candidate is thinking about as they're exploring finding the right home for their associateship?
Great question. Before we jump into that, can I just say, I just want to thank you for having this as a an audio and not video, because my good friend Rich here has a face for radio. So. We're very thankful.
I am every day when we record as well.
All right. So a couple of things are important for a candidate. And for me, you know, over the course of my career, there's a few things that always check the list. You know, one of the first things that we generally find, a candidate's probably looking for either location, they're looking for money, mm-hmm. or they're looking for quality of life, or some combination of the three. What we generally find is that what we have to do from a candidate side, or what a candidate should do prior to speaking to us really, is they need to sit down and evaluate what's most important to them. We spend a lot of time talking with our clients, consulting with them, and saying, hey, look, I know that you want Michael Jordan, right? Everybody mm-hmm. wants Michael Jordan in their practice. But what do you need? What's most important? Because everybody wants a utopia, but utopia doesn't exist. We all know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rich, we've done this for years, and we know that you're never going to find 100% of those things. So let's try to find 80%. And that's the same thing that we tell a candidate. And so what I would tell you is the most important things for a candidate is they need to sit down and figure out what that is for them. Is it quality of life number one, location's number two, and money's number three? Or is that reversed? Are you location dependent? Do you need to be by your family, or is it important to you to be in a certain locale? So for everybody, it's a little bit different, but I think it starts with ranking those three.
How often does that ranking change if we're talking someone who's fresh out of school and it's their first job versus they've been an associate in various practices and now they're looking for like a forever home or their next location?
Yeah, in my experience, almost every time. I would tell you about 80% of the time, I think the numbers are actually 80% that...
Yeah, it's about 80%.
That an associate comes out, they get their first job, and within 3 years, they're looking for another one. Almost 80% of the time. And why is that? Is it because they didn't do the research on the front end? I don't think so. I think that people tend to come out of school and they're being told by their peers, their parents, everybody around them, what it is that they should do. Mm-hmm. And what happens is over that next step in your career, so to speak, is actually going out and getting that job. And then you start to realize like, you know, I don't really like that. That's not what's most important to me. That was what was most important to my mom or mm-hmm. my dad or mm-hmm. even my spouse. And sometimes mm-hmm. that changes too. too in some of those instances. So I would say about 80% of the time we find that changes within 3 years of someone leaving practice.
That's so funny. I have to say this. I have a coffee cup that says, do not let everyone should all over you.
I should have, would have, could have. Uh-huh.
And I think it's very true because I think that, and this is true outside of dentistry, if you come out of school and your sole focus has been to get your degree and be able to go do the thing you have in life, you really don't know. Most people do not know what they truly want to do or what they want to do even with the thing that they've just earned, right? They just know, I was passionate about X, dentistry in this case, and now I have this, and like, how do I now build a life off of this? So I love the should thing.
No, and that was perfect. The segue I want to make on that is, I was going to say, based on what Kevin said, is a lot of these folks come out of school, they've worked hard, they want to go to work, they have bills to pay, they have school loans, they have expenses that they need to pay, but at the same time, they feel to themselves like they want to be part of the, let's say, the big city. Let's say they come from a rural area, they graduated a fairly large school in a major metro area. So this is one of the reasons that we have turnover early on, is they decide that they want to go and live in the big city. And about 3 or 4 years goes by and they realize that they miss their folks, they miss their family. They might have had a loved one from high school, you know, like a sweetheart from high school, whatever the scenario might be. And they realize they want to go back to their roots or go back to where they came from. And that creates a lot of the turnover there.
Yeah, we see that all the time. I mean, I think it's the number of practices I've sold because the spouse became unhappy with snow. Or they have their children and then they want to go back to where the in-laws are. And the number of people we talk to are where we say, hey, where do you want to go? And they literally say, I'll go anywhere. And I'm like, will you really go anywhere? Like, you have to have a preference. Like, I like the snow. I like the middle of the country. I like the, you know, you have to have something that you like, which will help narrow that down. Because if you just chase money, in my experience, it sounds like your experience too. Like, eventually you're going to find location matters more than you think.
I'm living proof of the same thing. When I got out of college, I moved to the big city from Wisconsin and end up moving to the East Coast. And that lasted for a very short period of time. But like you say, I mean, it's not necessarily always the money as much as it is the excitement of that person saying, well, I'll go anywhere. I'll move anywhere. I don't care about the snow or I don't care about the heat, you know, but then when they get there, they go, this isn't for me.
Yeah, unless you're from Texas, and we always stay in Texas. So,
or you get here as fast as you can.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're smart. So we talked about preparation in the last episode. If you were, you know, an owner and preparing to kind of onboard and kind of try to find an associate, what if you're an associate and you're preparing to enter this recruiting process and you have a collection of places, locations, types of practices you might be interested in? Like, what does someone do to kind of focus themselves in on preparing for this process as a candidate?
Yeah, great question. Make a list. That's where you start each and every time. It's funny because my brother called me just the other day and he said, hey, Kevin, I need to buy a car for my daughter. And I said, okay, what kind of car? And he said, I don't know, a chick car. And then, bro, what does that even mean? what does that mean? And he's like, I don't know, just, you know, like a chick car. I'm like, do you have a budget? Well, we'll talk about that once we get options.
Nope.
That's not how
nope.
this works.
Right.
And so it's funny, I ended up having about a 20-minute conversation with him. And all of my conversation really was trying to drill down. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because you start to ask those questions. And suddenly, they do have it in their head. They know exactly what they want. They just don't know how to articulate it. And so I would tell you, for a candidate, the first thing you probably should do is call Arthur Marshall. talk to one of our recruiters, because they'll help you put that together. But let's say you didn't do that. You didn't take that step. I'd sit down. And it's not just about you sitting down. You need to sit down with your spouse. If you're married, I promise you, I don't know how many times, Rich, how many times have we heard somebody tell us, is there anybody else that's going to help you make this decision? Just me.
I had that just this morning with someone. I said, are you the only decision maker? And he said, yes, absolutely. And we got all done about an hour into it. And he said, well, I'm going to have to talk to her first. And I wanted to say, well, you told me. But, you know, you can't beat people up for that. That was just what was going on in their mind.
That's right.
In his mind.
And more often than not, you know, that spouse is probably the one making more of the decision for you. And so sit down with your spouse. Make a list of the things that are important to you. And again, I go back to the very beginning when I said, hey, break it down. Mm-hmm. Location. Family, money, growth, longevity, partnership. Write all of those things down and stack rank those. those things. And then you'll start to be able to narrow those things down, right? Because then you go, all right, well, location may be number one on your list. And if that is, that narrows it down dramatically. If it is at the bottom of your list, and it's truly at the bottom of your list, it opens it up dramatically. And so I think that's the first step in any process.
And I think I would imagine being honest with yourself too about like maybe size and type of practice. Do I want to be in like a multi-doctor practice? Would I prefer to work with one person? Would I rather, you know, like, am I someone who likes a holistic side? Like even from a clinical standpoint, like they may not know that yet, depending on how far in their career they are. But I would assume being honest with yourself about those components too, about like, what do I really want and who do I think I would work best with is probably also very valuable for you guys to know.
Yeah, that's a great point, Christy, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't know that. They just don't have it together yet, you know? Yeah. They're still coming out of school. And I wanted to make one very valid point. There's two types of candidates. There's your active candidate that's actively looking for an opportunity, and normally we call those shoppers. Those are the candidates that are shopping different locations in different areas. And then you have your passive candidate. And your passive candidate is already working. Mm-hmm. They're already in practice, but they're thinking, they're on the fence, and they're thinking that they want to become an owner. They want to become a partner. They're tired of working for whatever it may be, a larger group or a DSO or whatever the case might be. So that type of candidate is the one that gets the sourcing and marketing brochure from us or whatever AI or however we get it to them. And they look at it and they say to their significant other, they say, hey, honey, here's an opportunity here, and we've always talked about maybe wanting to live there and have kids there or take our children there, whatever the case might be. And the next thing you know, they reach out to the recruiter, and the recruiter starts talking about the opportunity, and wham, they schedule an interview, they fit the practice, and it's a perfect fit. The active candidate, not so much. The active candidate is very, very active, exactly what the word says, and they're hard to nail down.
Question. How often is someone looking to relocate in the same geography or same city that they already are in? And what is in this kind of goes to your process. How is that person? Because I can imagine that person's also very nervous for it to get out that they're looking at other practices, especially in this type of a community. How often are they looking to relocate? And then how does the process work if that's kind of what they're looking to do?
That's a really good question also. That depends on the age or how long that candidate has been practicing as to the proximity of where they want to make that move. Mm-hmm. If they like where they're living, but they're unhappy where they're currently at, then they'll look at every different opportunity within a 30 to 45 minute drive if there's a commute involved without having to buy a new home or whatever the case might be. But then again, you have the situation where the people are just not happy where they're at and they want to look at a different part of the country.
Got it.
And that's more of a...
Yeah, I would say it's actually fairly rare for a practice to find somebody that's in their locale. Once they engage us, we generally tell people, hey, check your surroundings, check into your localities, talk to all of your connections, anybody that you know, and let's make sure we exhaust that before we move to a more active recruitment like you would with us. What is interesting, though, is we do see it, I would probably say about 10% of the time, where you own a practice and you engage with us. And you said you've already canvassed the whole area. And what happens is we find somebody that's 15 minutes away. They're right up the road. They're working at a competitor practice. And you've been advertising your job forever and they've never applied to you. And part of the reason is they're scared. They're scared because they live locally and they're not going to apply to your job because they're afraid you're going to pick up the phone and call their boss or whoever that may be. And what will happen is they'll apply to us. We'll talk to them. We'll explain the situation to them. We'll promise them that anonymity that they're looking for. And then suddenly you've got somebody that's right down the road and is a perfect fit for you. It's been your backyard the whole time, but you never get them.
It doesn't matter
how many times, how long you advertise, you'll never get that person.
That's very, very important. And one other point I would like to make is we're consultative. It's not always about getting the contract. You know, people think we're just all after getting the contract. I've had many situations, and as recent as a month ago, where I had a gentleman saying that he wanted to grow his practice. He was in more of a rural community, not super small, but 40,000 people, 35,000 people. And my question to him was, well, have you thought about going around and talking to the other practice owners in your area and just having coffee with them at a coffee shop or lunch or whatever? And it wasn't 2 weeks. He called me back and he goes, thank you so much. I found someone. And then I obviously referred them for transition.
Yeah.
You know, because they wanted to, one of them had brick and mortar, mm-hmm. and they wanted to combine and become owners together. So these are things that we bring up to these type of candidates that are important with regard to take a look around you first before mm-hmm. you go ahead and retain us to do the job for you.
No, I love that. And I think it's very true. We find the same far as like, it's rare to find someone who wants to buy your practice within 5 or 10 miles, but across the country, someone wants to relocate.
Can I just add something yeah. small to that? Because this does happen. And it's a good point because sometimes people don't know how to react when this happens. They engage with us. Maybe they've interviewed somebody. They interviewed somebody 2 years ago and they turned them down. And we drum that person back up. And now they're going, oh, how does that? I mean, I interviewed them 2 years ago, right? And because they now have a fresh insight, there's somebody else that's kind of running the process. Or maybe we've gone in and we've consulted with them on how to improve their practice. Suddenly that person's going, wow, that maybe I should take a second look at that. That might be a better fit now. We see that more often than I'd care to admit. Because as I talked about on a previous episode, it's not Burger King. Mm-hmm. It's not, hey, do you want fries with that? You know, part of our job is to go in and not just say, hey, that's what you're looking for. We're going to go find it. It's to consult with you and say, hey, I understand that's what you're looking for. Let me make sure you understand what the general market is looking for. Mm-hmm. This is how you rank in comparison to the people around you. And maybe there are a couple of small things that we can do that will make you that much more attractive. And it'll turn that thing around relatively quickly.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
What does the interviewing process, if a candidate is working with Arthur Marshall, give me kind of the actual process of how they engage with you and kind of what that looks like from their perspective, from kind of first to I've got a job with a client?
Yeah, perfect. Great question. So we talk to our clients a lot about this, but when someone engages, let's say a candidate is engaging with us. So maybe one of my recruiters picked up the phone and cold called them, or they've responded to a job posting that we've had out there. What the recruiter's going to do is they spend on average 3 hours with that candidate and that candidate's spouse prior to ever presenting it over to a client. And what they're really trying to do is do what we call in our industry, just a screen. They're trying to really understand everything there is to know about that candidate. So we talked about it earlier. We talked about the list, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people, just like with my brother, when he was searching for the car, he knew what kind of car he wanted to buy. He just didn't know how to articulate that.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's so important for our recruiters to spend so much time with these people to make sure we're understanding and getting a real understanding of what it is they're looking for. So before we ever present them with the opportunity, which by the way, sometimes that's a challenge. You'll have candidates that'll call and go, tell me about that job. Well, let me try to understand a little bit about you first. No, no, I don't care. I just want the job. And I've had
or how much does it pay?
How much does it pay? Mm-hmm. Where's it at?
What's the compensation?
You know, and well, hold on, let's take a step back. And I've had recruiters that have told candidates before, hey, I just don't think you'd be a fit. What do you mean? You haven't even told me anything. You won't even talk to me, so you're not yeah. going to be a fit for yep. our
We
our
literally
client.
Have candidates red flagged in our database, mm-hmm. do not communicate with, because they've just proven to be not nice people.
Yeah.
You know, and that hurts us, because when we start screening them and they act, you know, all that great, and then when they interview and they're not that great, that creates a conflict
yeah.
between us and your owner, 100%. The client.
Yeah, I mean, hit the nail on the head. And so we're trying to not just... Sometimes a candidate will call in and they'll say, hey, I'm calling about job 3105. And we'll go, great, let's talk a little bit about yourself. And we begin to screen those guys and get to understand them. We talk to their spouse, understand what their spouse is looking for. And we go, job 3105 is not fit for you. But job 3301, mm-hmm. it is. And here's why. And then we begin the presentation. So one of the things that we always let our clients understand is that when we're going through the process, it's all inclusive. We're really trying to understand and figure out not just that this person will accept your job, but will this person stay long term? Now,
yeah.
I mean, I can't promise that. You never know till they get there. But that front end work, really diving in and understanding mm-hmm. everything there is to know about them, is going to give us a pretty good indicator whether they're going to be that long term fit.
Gosh, literally the same exact thing when we screen candidates for buying practices. Same they just call
you.
And they say, how much is it?
Yeah,
and Catriona's
right.
like, back up. I got to learn about you first.
Yeah. And unfortunately, they just don't know, right?
No,
so
yeah.
they just want to get to the point. They're busy. They're seeing patients.
Yeah.
You know, they've got a staff to take care of. So they're like, you know, hey, listen, I got 15 minutes and that's all I have. There is one other thing I wanted to point out that just happened again, another story that just happened recently. We market extensively nationwide. We're a national firm. And I just had a response on one of our e-blasts through our database that went out, and it was a doctor, a general dentist, and she was in North Carolina, and she said, I'm not looking for an associate, I'm looking for a job. That was her response. And I immediately responded to her, well, where exactly are you located and what are you looking for? And she told me, I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I'd like something within 30 minutes to an hour from Charlotte. I immediately put her name out to all the recruiters in our whole company and said, this is a candidate that responded to a marketing email. Is anyone interested? And immediately a recruiter, Colin, reached out to me and said, I've got the perfect spot for her. Let me call her and talk to her. I don't have the end result. We don't have the final story yet. And I'm not sure that she's even interviewed yet because that's how recent it was. So there's many different ways that we find those candidates, which is kind of off subject of what your question was.
No, but I think it's important. I think it's important to understand that, like, as an individual searching, right, you can only do so much. You only have so many resources. Like, to maximize your network, you have to maximize kind of all the tentacles you put out. And I think that that's really important if you're listening, right? Like, Arthur Marshall is a incredible resource to help expand your tentacles, but you also have to do the work, right? You have to do the homework yourself. You have to understand what you want. Exactly. You have to kind of keep the momentum going, right? Mm-hmm. Being responsive to calls, being responsive to recruiters' requests and those things, right? So that those relationships can kind of continue to develop. So, okay, we did this for sellers, and so I want to do it for associates. Do's and don'ts. If I'm a candidate listening who is going to start exploring this, I am sure there's a lot of don'ts if we come up with interviewing, right? And we didn't really get into a lot of those. So if we need to spend a little bit more time in the do's and don'ts of the interview process, we can definitely do that. But who wants to go first here? Rich, you want to go first?
Yeah, with regard to the candidate and giving them advice on how to interview, that's what you're asking,
yeah, correct? Do's and don'ts of, like, the interview process from a candidate's perspective.
So our recruiters really try as hard as they can to convey to the candidates that it's not all about them all the time. Mm-hmm. Even though this is a lifetime decision for them and they're making a big move for them and their family, whether they have a family or not, that when they're talking to the client or to the seller, not always asking, I, me, my, what about me? How much are you paying? Ask more about the mechanics of the business. Ask more about the type of procedures that are expected. What are the parameters? Be more conversational with regard to their interest as a buyer, because absolutely, they're the one offering you the job, right? So don't have your hand out all the time. Don't be always saying, well, what's in it for me? Is there a sign-on bonus? Is there a relocation stipend? Is there
what are the benefits? How many days off?
Yeah, what's the, you get it. You get where I'm going with this. And I think our listeners will get what I'm saying too, is don't be selfish. Be interactive in the process and you'll get a lot further with the seller or with the owner than you would if it's all about you.
Love that.
I've got one great don't and one great do.
Okay.
So don't burn a bridge. We see this all the time. Candidates will go in, maybe the interview started rough or somebody was late or they saw something they just didn't like and they just burn the interview. They crash it. They stop paying attention. They kind of intentionally ruin that interview. And here's what I tell everybody. Your job as a candidate when you go in is to get an offer. No matter what, if you're a candidate, go get an offer. Doesn't mean you have to accept it, but I want you to get that offer because here's what happens. And we've seen it time and time again. It's a small space. You go in there and maybe you didn't like something and you just decide, hey, I'm out. I'm not going to show up to the second part of this interview. I'm just going to bail at lunch. I mean, all the time, right? That doctor probably knows other practices.
Oh,
and they're
going
to tell people. I promise you, people talk about bad experiences a heck of a lot more than they talk about good experiences. So don't burn a bridge. And do broaden your horizons. I talked earlier about making that list. Don't get so dead set in it. When you're searching for an opportunity, you're searching for your next practice, it's a really good time to do some introspective. It's a really good time to learn a lot more about yourself. You have an opportunity to find out if what your life has looked like so far can look a lot different. So broaden those horizons. Don't get stuck on, I have to be in this locale. That's generally the one that burns you the most. If you are only looking, you're only geographically focused, you're going to find yourself in situations where more often than not, you're unhappy.
Yeah.
Make sure that the practice is a good fit for you.
I saw you jotting down some notes. What else
I
you did. Got?
I just wanted to, you know, whenever he talks, it reminds me of something else, I think.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm not going to get schmoozy today, okay? Don't ghost your owner.
Yeah.
Don't just all of a sudden fall off the face of the earth and not respond to an email or a text, because that gets back to what Kevin just said. You're burning a bridge. Mm-hmm. And people, they remember that.
Yes, they do.
They remember your last name, especially if it's unique, which a lot of our last names are unique. Mm-hmm. And they, I remember that guy. And that guy never called me back. And he never, don't do that. And the other thing is communicate. Don't be afraid to ask those questions. As I said, I think it was in our 101, mm-hmm. I said, we're all different personalities. Mm-hmm. Everyone is different. We're wired differently. And what makes us work is differently. But try as hard as you can to communicate on both sides, both parties. Just be open and be transparent.
I love that.
Can I add to something real quick?
Sorry. Gosh, you always gotta be the one-upper, huh?
I'm sorry. But here's the thing, and this really applies to both the candidate and to the client or the practice owner, is don't be afraid to have the tough conversation. I'm telling you, I see it all the time. People are afraid to say, no, that's not a fit for me, or no, that candidate's not a right fit. The worst thing that we see in our experience is, he talks about ghosting. We have candidates that'll go into an interview and they'll ghost us. They'll ghost the client, and that's terrible. But I'll tell you what's even worse is when a client hires us, they invest in hiring us to help them find their next person, and then our recruiter can't get in touch with them. Mm-hmm. Or we send over a candidate and they just say, not interested. Our response is, okay, can you tell me why? So I don't send that kind of person to you again? Nothing.
Yeah.
That's the absolute worst thing you can do. It's an act of recruitment. Don't waste your investment, right?
It's almost like they weren't ready.
Oh, yes.
That's number one clue that you're not ready yet. Mm-hmm. You don't need it badly enough. Yeah. Well, this was so fun. I'm going to ask Joellen to write a blog on this as well that we'll put out with this. And I can think of a lot of questions that we probably didn't get to. So if you guys get some follow-up questions from us for the blog, don't be alarmed. But I've enjoyed talking with you about this topic. So many parallels to what we do every day on both sides of the table. And so just thanks for hanging out with us today and providing such incredible insight for our listeners. Again, Arthur Marshall, arthurmarshall.com. Feel free if you feel like you are on the cusp of needing an associate, you need a buyer, you need a partner, you are someone who's looking for a role of any of those three anywhere in the country, know that you can reach out to these guys and they can help you. And feel free to reach out to us and we'll make a personal introduction. Rich, Kevin, thank you.
Thank you
for having us. And all right, team, that's all we have today. Thanks for joining us on episode 102. And if you're an owner, be sure to check out episode 1, or a buyer, where we talk about searching for the right associate or partner. As always, make sure to share this transition love with those who may not know of us yet. And of course, subscribe to Transition Talk wherever you listen to your podcast. Until next time, friends.